Well, good morning. So if you missed the Aurora the other night, it looked pretty much like that bumper video just now. So if you missed it, now you got it, you're all cut up. So happy, 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 sweet Mother's Day, man. I love Mother's Day a ton. It's one of my favorite things, and there's some reasons for that. I think the basic one is because I have a mom. Why shouldn't I love that? I am married to a woman that is a mom. I love that. The little girl that made my wife a mom is now a mom, and I love that. And I have all the versions of moms. I've got the mother-in-law version. I've got the step version. I've got a few different spiritual versions in there that have been major mentors to my life at different points in time. And so for all of that, when there's a day like today, I love that we kind of break from our current series, stop, and we just kind of celebrate all that are moms, either here in the room or watching online. Because here's the thing I've learned over the years of just kind of watching the mothers in my world. It's not for the faint of heart at all. Like, it's a tough gig, man. Like, it's strange. Like, when this comes into your life and this little person is there in your presence, there is a level of love that comes up in you and wells up and presses out that you probably never thought was possible. Like, it's a whole different gear. It's a different level of love. But that same love has a risk element involved. Because as soon as you feel that intensity of love, you're also going to have the fear of heartbreak and heartache and concern and worry and doubt. And all the pressure of motherhood comes into that because you're like, I love this little person so much. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to break them. I don't want to disappoint them. I don't want to let them down. That's a ton of pressure. And so I get all of those dynamics. And so when I think about moms, I'm like, man, you all are on 24/7. And every day you have to wear a dozen different hats. And as your kids are getting older, it doesn't necessarily get it easier. It's differently challenging. And so for all those reasons, when I think about a day like today, I simply wanted to step back and go, you know what? I appreciate your tenacious grit, your enduring grace. And I want to make sure that a day like today is really just meant to encourage you, to inspire you, and to appreciate you. Now, I say that in part because it was interesting. Last year, we did Mother's Day, and I had some moms come out and talk to me and say, thank you for that. I really appreciate it. There's so many pressures on being a mom, and I love that it just kind of, it wasn't about the pressure, but it was about just trying to rest in the grace of God as being a mom and everything else, and it was great. But then I had somebody get a hold of me a couple days later, and they're like, can we meet? I'm like, sure, that sounds bad. So so we meet, and he says, you know, I was listening to your Mother's Day talk, and I don't know if I agreed with that. I don't know if it was really that healthy. And I said, give me some pointers here, what you're talking about. He goes, well, it just felt like a sappy TED talk. And I said, well, can I give you my heart when it comes to moms? I've watched them for a long time, and I know they feel like they need to sometimes perform, and it seems like most moms feel like they're always kind of missing something, and they put a lot of pressure on themselves. And so when it comes to a day like Mother's Day, I just, again, want to inspire, encourage, uplift, and build up. And then his response was, well, maybe you need to confront moms more. And I said, I think they do that a lot on their own, right? I think they're sometimes their toughest critic. And I said, that's why I just want to encourage. To which his response is, well, I've seen some of the parenting around the church. Maybe you need to confront them more. And it broke my heart. It broke my heart that there couldn't be this space that says, I get what they're going through. And I get what they need, especially on a day meant to celebrate them, where there may be some disappointments or some pressures or some things going on inside. It just broke my heart that there was this sense of like, we need to put a little bit more pressure, where I'm like, no. So I listened to that advice, I took it in, and I decided today is nothing but encouragement still, right? Like, that's what I believe the ladies in the room need. Thank you for that. Amen. So that's what we're doing today. Now, we're going to look at a weird story because I like to do that, right? But it's meant to bless you, and I think it will in the process. And so right now, I want to go ahead and pray. And as I pray, I just want to pray a prayer of blessing over the moms with us today, watching online or here in the room, just hopefully to just give you a little bit of oxygen in your world and a little bit of pep in your step, because I know you're going all the time and we are thankful for what you do. So let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you for the moms, the ladies, the givers in this room who, again, day in, day out, give heart, give soul, give grit, give grace just keep moving and moving and moving. And I pray that by your gracious spirit, you will encourage them. I don't know where every mom is today as far as what's in her mind and heart and the things that she's facing, but I pray there will be a sense of your presence, a sense of your power, a sense of your pleasure over them. Like, I just think about how much, like Zephaniah 3:17 says, you sing with delight over your people. And I pray that they sense your song of delight over them as they make these investments. It doesn't matter what age of life. No mom stops being a mom. It doesn't matter if their kids are adults and long out of the home, or it's just in the early days and weeks of this whole journey. We know that it's a lot, and I pray that you will give them for all that they need. And so I pray that today, as we look at the story of a mom, that we will learn, that we will laugh a little, that we will ponder, and then from that, we will see just how gracious you are with us. And so, Jesus, we love you and thank you. We certainly look to you today in your good and kind name. Amen. All right, so today I want to share a story with you, and it's not just a story about a mom who was tenacious and focused and had this idea of grit, but it's also a story of a mom that in the process of the story gets a release herself. So she's seeking release for her daughter, but in the process of this, and it's going to look a little wonky, but in the process it's designed to release her from some things in addition to seeing her daughter released from some things. And so it starts in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 15, and it opens this way. It says, Jesus went away from there, which was the land of the Jewish population, and he withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. Now, some of you are already going to kind of be familiar with this, but here's the thing. I want to stop for a minute. This is a slight bit of like Bible scholarship so we can understand a little bit better the story, because sometimes we come across these stories and we just read them and we go, oh yeah, and we move on to the next one in the story. But we don't stop and go, why this story right here? Like, it has like a function beyond just the story itself. It's not just history telling. It's like when Matthew sits down to kind of catalog this life of Jesus, he doesn't even do it in chronology, right? He kind of breaks it up into themes. And so you have to ask the question, limited ink, limited paper, why this story in this place? See, that's valuable because it comes in a section that is a part of a larger story that once we begin to look at it, we go, oh, there's something to be noticed here. And so we're going to push all the way to the front of this chapter to try to understand maybe what's going on a little bit. And it starts in verse 1 of chapter 15. It says, then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem, and they said, why do your disciples break the traditions of the elders, for they do not wash their hands when they eat bread? That's a major sin, apparently. So make sure your kids wash their hands all the time after they eat their bread, or at least before. Now, you may look at that and go, well, what's that have to do with this other person? Well, the way Matthew has put this together is it's a literary structure. It's meant to go, there's some parallel here. There's some sense of connection between the two. And so I've put together a little bit of a diagram so you can begin to now see how Matthew is putting it together, right? At the ultimate peak, the pinnacle of everything, the top of the top is Pharisees and scribes from the capital city of God, right? So certain persons coming to deal with Jesus over certain things, and they have some questions, right? But when you see who they are and where they come from, there is no group closer to God. There is no group considered more holy, more welcomed of God than that particular group, right? But they have a problem. There is this impurity issue that they want to debate. On the extreme other end of the social spectrum, you can't get any farther, is this Canaanite woman, right? And she is from a non-Jewish region. It is the valley of the depths of despair. It's darkness because her daughter is demon-possessed. She's haunted by some spirit. And so when you think about the way Matthew's putting this together, he's like, here are two separate parties, right? Their problems are kind of similar. Unclean food or unclean hands, unclean spirit. There's some commonality, but distant, very distant. So it's a weird deal. But what he's trying to capture is that there is nothing further from these groups that this woman could be, right? So she is further socially, religiously, spiritually, monetarily, every conceivable way. She's just further apart. But what we're going to find in the story is that they have a certain level of commonality. But as she comes into the presence of Jesus, as she's hearing he's entered into the region, she's like, man, I have no leverage. I have no kind of connections. I have no in to try to get him to do a thing. I'm a Canaanite. He's a Jew. What am I going to do? Well, she leans into her grit, right? Just leans into her grit. And she's going to need every ounce of it to do this thing, because what's interesting about this story is it's the most un-Jesus-like Jesus story. I'll just warn you in advance. Like, at first you're going to be like, man, jerk Jesus showed up to the story time. You're going to be thrown off by it at first, but I don't believe that's the real story, and I think we're going to see the real story unfold. And so Jesus has dealt with the top of the top, best of the best, the most godly, holy city and leaders in the world, and now he's in the opposite region, dealing with an opposite type of person, right? And so he leaves Jewish territory, he enters Gentile territory, and then there's this Canaanite woman from the region, and she's saying, have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. Now, you would think normally this is the perfect setup for a Jesus moment, right? Like, you all know Jesus. I know Jesus, right? Here's a marginalized woman from an outsider group in desperate need, has a daughter who's hurting. How is this not Jesus's total jam? Like, it's checking all the blessing boxes that he normally be like, you bet, girl, I'm in this. Let's make this thing happen. 5 minutes later, your daughter's healed. We're done. I'm moving. Like, you normally would think that. But instead, here's what it says, verse 23, he did not answer her a word. That's weird, right? I mean, that's strange. That's not the Jesus we know, right? Here's this mom, desperate, just clawing for whatever she can get. Her kid is possessed by pure evil, and Jesus, who is actually God, who loves holiness and hates evil things, this is the moment you would think you'd be like, of course I'm going to help you. But instead, he doesn't even acknowledge her. That's weird. It's okay to think that. Makes you kind of wonder, like, is this like Jesus is on vacation? And he's a celebrity. He's like, no, I'm not going to do a selfie with you. I'm busy doing my own thing. Is he in a bad mood this day? Or if I'm supposed to seek to be like Jesus, can I just blow people off when I want to? Like, oh, all right, this is my open door finally to do my own thing. Is that what this is all about? And is that what's going on? Well, on the surface, it seems like that. But there's a lot more going on if you know where or how to look at the story. But that's the key. And this is where I sometimes feel bad as a pastor. Like, my job is to study and understand certain things and dig in. And when you read the English translation, you may not pick up on things. Or if you're not thinking about themes, you may miss things. And so I want to highlight three ideas in the opening of the story, right? It says she's a Canaanite. Says she has a demon-possessed daughter. And in the midst of that, she calls Jesus son of David. Now, I want to highlight these three different things because they really give us a sense of what's actually happening in the story. And if I was to just reduce it down really quickly, here's what she's doing. Ready? She is seeking to deceive Jesus to get him to do what she needs him to do for her daughter. Seems weird. But that's what she's doing. So let's restructure for a minute. Let's go back into the world and understand it. She's a Canaanite. Canaanites and Jews, different pages, man. Jews and Canaanites hate each other, are hated by each other, don't get along, don't like each other. Do you know why the Canaanites and the Jews hate each other? Because about 1,000 years before, there was a dude named David. And King David wiped out the Canaanites. Men, women, children, pregnant women, you name it, he slaughtered all sorts of Canaanites. It's a terrible history element in the life of David and in the history of Israel. So no Canaanite likes David. No Jewish person likes the Canaanites because they hate David. It's a whole big mess. But now she's invoking this image. Jesus, son of David. What she's trying to do is obscure her heritage, obscure her background. She's trying to flatter him, butter him up. Use something that sounds very pro-Jewish. So in some ways, what she's doing, she's cloaking her identity. She's trying to pretend like, yeah, I'm in a Gentile territory, but I'm one of you. because I have a need of a Jewish healer. And if I say I'm a Canaanite woman who needs a Jewish healer, the odds of the Jewish healer helping me are like zero. So I'll just pretend I'm something I'm not to get what I need. What gives her away is the description of her daughter. Gentiles say demon-possessed. Jews say unclean spirit. So when she says, my daughter is demon-possessed, Jesus knows, like, you just debunked your own ruse here. I see what you're really up to. I see what you're doing, right? And so initially, he's ignoring her because she's lying to him. She's just trying to kind of use him through this nefarious means to get what she most wants. Now, to be fair, I get it. Like, who wouldn't understand a mom who's seeing their kids suffer, right? If you really love your kid, man, you're gonna lie, cheat, steal to try to bring relief. So I don't look at her and go, what a terrible person. I go, man, I get it. 100%, I understand her heart. And so she gives this impression of her Jewish solidarity, right? Just, it's the way she's gonna do it because she needs something from the Jewish miracle worker. And so she's just all in. What's interesting about that, though, and this is why I go back to Matthew is putting these stories together, is between the first story and then the second story, the religious leaders and this Canaanite woman, Jesus says, here's what's really happening with all of you. He says, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship is a farce. And then he says, for out of the heart comes all these different things. And one of those things is false testimony or false witness. And so tucked exactly between the two stories, the two persons with two problems and everything else about uncleanliness, at the center of that is what Jesus is getting at, and it's why Matthew puts it where he puts it, is to say, man, it doesn't matter if you're at the pinnacle or in the valley. If your heart is false, that's the problem. And so this is where both parties have this commonality, have this centrality, and for her, it's just, she's just being false about it. False witness. She doesn't really mean son of David. She's just using it. She's saying what she needs to say to get what she needs to get. And so Jesus ignores her, but she keeps bugging him. In the original Greek language, she won't stop talking. She won't stop chasing down. And so the disciples get involved. The disciples came to Jesus and they urged him, saying, send her away because she keeps shouting at us. She's just not giving up. Now, when they say send her away, in the original language, it could go one of two ways. It could either mean just shoo her off, reject her wishes, or it could mean free her up, which means just fulfill her request. So either way, they're like, man, she just keeps barking at us, so do us a favor, get rid of the demon or get rid of the Karen. We don't care which, but let's move on because this is too crazy. But then he answered and he said, and by the way, when he answers and says, it's not to her at this point, it's to the disciples. So he's still not engaging her. He says to them, the disciples, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But if I was to add to this, says the man who withdrew into the region of Tyre and Sidon. Right? So I don't know if you see that. But he's like, I'm only for Israel. And the fellas could be like, then bro, why did we leave the territory of Israel? Why are we hanging out here? Why are we interacting with this grouping? If you're not for this grouping, Jesus, this is really strange that you're taking your time out to come here, but you're not willing to help anybody who lives here. Again, on the surface, this doesn't sound much like Jesus at all. But here's what I really believe in the story. I believe he's up to something that is good news for moms. Good news for this mom and good news for all moms. If we stick with the story and we're trying to be in their sandals and understanding in their world and in their language, trying to really get there, if we do that, man, it's going to reward. And it's going to reward because we see this mom sticking with it in her sandals. And so the woman pursues the disciples, they protest, and Jesus maintains his posture. But now the woman comes right up to him. And she began to bow down before him, and she said, Lord, Lord, help me, right? Just help me. Now, just for a moment here, I'll tell you what I think is so impressive about this lady, right? Think about how intimidating it would be to be a single woman. I don't mean single like she doesn't have a husband. We don't know that part of it, but she's by herself in the story. approaching 13 Jewish males, right? I mean, again, she knows they don't like my kind don't like their kind, but I'm so desperate, I'm going to their kind. And there's 13 of them, 13 Jewish males. By the way, women were not always thought of super highly in the Jewish population either. And certainly Canaanite women, again, their most favorite king wiped out Canaanite women without much remorse for it. But she's pushing past all of that intimidation, all of that fear, all of that I might be rejected, or even in the midst of being rejected, right? Like literally he's blowing her off and she's relentless. She won't stop, man. That's mom energy all the way. Love it. It's so good. And so she just keeps being persistent, right? And for the first time now, Jesus speaks to her. And he answers and he says to her, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." You're like, savage, Jesus, man. Like, is this really what you say to this sweet lady? Here's the thing, you got to be in their world a little bit. Because what he's doing is he's calling her bluff. He's calling her bluff. He's calling out her ruse here, if you will. The children in this story is the Jewish population or the Israelites. And the dogs would be the Gentile population, or for this story, the Canaanites, of which is this woman and her daughter. And the bread would be, in essence, Jesus' blessing, his power, his ability to perform a miraculous thing. And so when he says this, he knows that she's going to hear, "Oh, he knows I'm a dog. I'm not a child of Israel. I called him son of David, trying to butter him up, trying to get him to think I'm something I'm not, and he caught me, I'm busted." And so that's really what's really happening at this part of the story. But as this gets said, there's also a shift in tone. A shift in tone in such a way that as this interaction begins to happen, I believe Jesus is like daring her, inviting her to keep pushing ahead. It's like, you know what, you're on the right track now. If you can get letting go of your false testimony and witness, if you can let go of the falseness of heart and you can lean into who I really am and who you really are, man, this is going to go to some really cool places. And so part of the reason we know there's a shift in tone is because of this idea of dog, right? See, in the Jewish world, dogs were considered like unclean, dirty, unwanted. It was basically like a cut down, right? It was like a slight of another person. Pretty common. But you got to think, Jesus spoke in Aramaic. Matthew writes in Greek. So Matthew's job is to interpret whatever Jesus said in a new language, but to capture the essence and the tone. And so Matthew does something super strange for the original language. He doesn't use the actual word dog. He uses a different word, which is puppy, right? And in this, it's even more fascinating because it's a house puppy. Literally, there were some dogs, puppies, that were house puppies, that would be under the table of the master, and they would eat the crumbs that fall from the table. And so it was this kind of harmonious relationship, and so they weren't despised, they weren't unwanted. They were kind of a part of home life. And so instead of the derogatory dogs, it is this more accepting, interesting, provocative puppies that are maybe in the equation. And so suddenly this initial coldness is inspiring conversation. The tone still is seemingly no, or at least that seems to be the answer, but Jesus is speaking with her and they're interacting. Now at this point for the woman, she could go any number of directions. She could be offended, I guess. "What, I'm a dog? Forget you, man. You're in my territory, you leave." Or she could be like, "What about the children? Really? You're going to be just like King David and he killed our kids and now you're just going to let our kids rot you?" She could get all nasty and defensive or whatever. She could do any number of things. She could protest. "Why did you even show up? Just to let us know you have power but refuse to use it in our presence? Like, are you that cruel?" But that's not what she does. Instead, we're going to see she simply accepts her place in the story. And she's going to go from false witness and false heart to just ownership. She's going to say, "I'm an outsider. I'm a Canaanite woman. I'm not a David lover. I'm not a child of Israel. I'm a dog, but like you inferred, I'm like a puppy waiting below the table." And so she says, "Yes, Lord, it's true, really, but please help me, for even the dogs feed on the crumbs that fall from the master's table." you are a witness to one of the coolest little interchanges or interplays in all of the New Testament. And here's why. Often, when people come to Jesus, critical, critiquing, whatever, they ponder something, they push something, they throw a question out there, and Jesus takes that and spins it on them, right? And kind of sends it back at them in a different way. And nobody ever has mastered that with Jesus. Everybody just gets kind of punked by him with that. Except one person, a mom in desperate need. And Jesus makes a statement, and she takes a statement, and she spins it, and she puts it back into his lap. Well said, Jesus, that's right. Only the puppies under the table. Could I be a puppy under the table? It's not for me as a child, but would it be for me as one in need under the table? It's so genius. But now as she comes with authenticity, openness, this sense of humility. She doesn't have to deceive anymore. She can be honest with who she is, honest with what her problems are. I love the vulnerability in this whole thing. In other words, she's not trying to be something or someone she's not. She's just facing things the way they are. She's just being open and honest in her need for Jesus to act. She's not trying to measure up or be something to get special attention. She's just simply saying, you're right. You're right, I have a need. It reminds me of her just being like, I'm just a Canaanite girl standing before a Jewish healer boy, you know, like in need for my child who's suffering, right? That's just the space she's in. So I love it. She's let go of all of that pretense where the leaders have not. The leaders are going to stay hard-hearted. Out of their heart are going to come terrible things. This woman, in contrast, comes in just like the leaders did. But now there's a transformation, and she's just letting go of this need to be what she doesn't need to be. Now, at this part of the story, as I was kind of going through it this week, it reminds me of another story. Weirdly enough, Willy Wonka, all right? And when I say Willy Wonka, I don't mean the more recent iterations. Those are false. They are not canon for me. The original Willy Wonka, 1970s, Gene Wilder, everything else. So in that story, at the very end of the story, like everything's been going great. It seems like everybody's on point. Charlie is the last one in the chocolate factory. That's the part of the show that's creepy. All these kids just disappear weirdly. Anyway, so he's there and he's with Willy Wonka, and suddenly Wonka gets cold and harsh. And he's like, you violated the contract that you signed. You did this and you did this and you did this. You need to leave my presence immediately. You get nothing from me. And so like the grandpa's there with Charlie and he's like, you're being rude, Mr. Wonka. And he's like, oh, good day, sir, good day. You know, it's that whole thing. And so from that, the grandpa grabs Charlie. He's like, you know what? This guy's a jerk, man. We need to leave. We need to go find Slugworth, his competitor, and we're going to give him the everlasting gobstopper secret and the concoction, how he could have that, and he can oust Willy Wonka in the candy-making world, right? That's what the grandfather's thinking to do. And so he's like, Charlie, let's leave. We're going to sell this to the competition. But Charlie is this man of character, and so he takes the everlasting gobstopper and he puts it right next to Mr. Wonka, and he says, thank you. Thank you for letting me tour your factory, and thank you for all that you did for me. And then instantly, what's Willy Wonka do? My boy! And he's all excited. He's like, Charlie, you got it. You passed the test, right? You're a person of character, integrity, honesty, everything else. And so suddenly the whole tone shifts. Well, in the same way, it's like Jesus, Willy Wonka is this woman right here, all right? So she says, but what if I'm a puppy under the table getting the crumbs, not a child, but still somebody in need looking to you? And then Jesus said to her, oh woman, right? It's just think Gene Wilder's voice. Oh woman, your faith is great and it shall be done for you as you desire. And her daughter was healed at once. Jesus doesn't even show up to heal the daughter. She's like, boom, this thing happens and suddenly she's healed. Only twice, you can tell I'm getting all excited about it. So only twice in the entire scope of Jesus' story and how it's told in the four Gospels, only twice are people celebrated as having great faith. And both are unwanted, undesired, unloved by the Jewish population, outsiders. They're dogs. They're the discardeds. One a Roman soldier and the other a Canaanite woman, right? And Jesus is like, this is profound faith. But what I love about this is you just got to look and go, well, what brought her to that place? Or perhaps to put it differently, why did Jesus take her on the journey that he did? Or perhaps to put it even a little bit more different, what lesson is there for all moms today? See, what I think Jesus was getting here to, and this is where I think this should be a hope and encouragement for moms, is he's like, you know what? Listen, sweet lady, you don't have to fake it. You don't have to make stuff up. You don't have to impress. You don't have to perform. You don't have to beg. All you need to do is be you, right? In that humility, in that sense of openness, in that vulnerability, in that authenticity, right? You don't have to show up in a way that impresses me, right? He's like, I'm gonna love you in your space. You just need to get there. Stop putting it on you to be these things. I don't need you to be that. I just need you, again, to be you. As soon as she reached that stage, Jesus is like, oh man, now that's faith. That's beautiful. That is the power of an authentic mom. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you for a very odd story. Like odd in the sense of from one point of view early on, it looks like, man, this is not the Jesus I know. And then by the end, I go, wow, this is a Jesus that's such more deep than maybe I knew before. And how your whole thing is to liberate, right? That was a reading today that you read out of Isaiah. Like, you want to liberate captives. And I think sometimes some of the most captivators in our lives are ourselves. And I think especially for moms that feel like, man, am I measuring up? Am I doing enough? Am I figuring it all out? I'm depleted. I'm not giving as much as I could. Like, so many pressures that hold them captive. And I pray that they would see you as this mom in the end was seen by you, saying you don't have to be all that stuff. Thank you for finally coming to the point of just you being you. That's where you love to work, Jesus. Help us all to own that, not just the moms and the women in the room, but all of us to own. That's how you see us. That's how you perceive us. Now, there may be some here with us today or some watching online where you don't follow Jesus, you're not a Christian. Well, this Jesus is for you. This liberating, love you where you're at Jesus is for you. Because he wants to transform, he wants to change, he wants to use, he wants to deploy. And if that is something you go, man, I want that in my life. Man, for you, that's just crying out to Jesus. It's in a prayer, whatever way you would consider crying out to him in your heart, saying, Jesus, I know that you came for me. I know you lived for me. I know you died for me. I know you rose for me so I can have life in you. And you take me as I am, where I'm at, and then you grow me, you shape me. But if you make that your prayer, your step today, we would love to know about it. I'll be at the door afterwards. We have a tile on our app. A phone number will be on the screen. We can say, I made that decision, because we would love to just celebrate with you in that. Again, Jesus, I pray over the moms. Encourage them, strengthen them, bless them, deploy them in really great ways, and let them know, man, they don't have to perform. They just don't have to perform. You are the one that loves them where they're at as they do what they do. And you are singing with the light over them. We thank you and praise you in your good name.